When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
And we all welcome you back here. Second half of the show has been a busy one. We have Heather Dinich coming up. We'll get her reaction to what George Kliakoff told us the other day. He is the Pac-12 commissioner. Had some strong comments about where we are with the CFP expansion. Let's check out Scott, who is up next in Knoxville. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Paul. How you doing, buddy?
Very well. Thank you.
I was wanting to ask you about, you got two callers that call in there a lot, and they all the time bragging on themselves.
Yeah.
One of them is Legend, I believe is his name, and the other one is Jim from Tuscaloosa. They brag on themselves all the time. They like they know everything, but they must have graduated from Alabama U and got a BS degree. Don't you think so?
I think they're both extremely well educated. Yes.
they talk like they are anyway.
But we only like to have the best on this show, Scott. We don't want people that don't know what they're talking about here, of course.
Oh, okay. I that might leave me out then.
No. We need some regular folks too. I mean, so you and I will feel more comfortable when we talk to those Ivy League educated callers like the team you mentioned.
Right. If I talk to them, I may have to ask them to tame it down a little bit so I can understand them.
Well, I will handle that for you. Thank you very much. How about Clay up next? Hey, Clay, good afternoon.
Hey, Mr. Feinbaum. Glad to hear that you and yours are doing well.
Thank you so much.
I've got a quick two-part Paul Bear Bryant story, and it's rather serendipitous that I've been listening to you for many years since you were in Birmingham.
Thank you.
But this is my first time calling and getting through today. So it's, like I said, rather serendipitous, I believe. I've been wanting to share this story with you for a while.
Wonderful.
So I'll start at the end of the story, which is the day of a little kid living in Laurel, Mississippi at the time, and my father says, son, let's go on a truck ride. Let's go for a drive. And he sits me down, I'm in the passenger seat, of course, as a little kid, shouldn't drive a truck. He says, son, I need to tell you something. And it popped into my head, first and last time this has ever happened. And I thought to myself, Paul Bear Bryant died. Mm. And I had no way of knowing that. And then he proceeded to tell me that Bear Bryant passed away. And that was rather weird. It still gives me chill bumps to this day.
Clay, how old were you at the time?
I would have been either, let's see, the day he passed away, this I was 9 years old.
Okay, yeah.
Yes, I was 9 years old when that happened. So then the other much more interesting story, and it's a testament to how Paul Bear Bryant and his staff was, my grandfather, who at the time was a high-ranking police officer captain at the in Jasper, Alabama, at the police department. He decides one day to come pick me up and take me. He said, we're going to Tuscaloosa to meet Bear Bryant. Being a little kid, I was 7 or 8 at this time. I thought, okay, sure. My granddad was like John Wayne to me. You know, he'll get whatever done. So we go there. Go into his office before his office, the secretary, and my grandfather, tells his credentials in the police department. Back then, police credentials, I guess, would get you a long way. Today, I'm sure you couldn't get to Nick Saban's secretary, but
no.
I digress. But my grandfather says, we're here. He, pointing to me, said he wants to meet Bear Bryant. Of course, my grandfather equally wanted to meet him. And she goes, oh, my goodness, I'm so sorry. You just missed him by like 5 or 10 minutes because spring football practice had just started. So they just walked out on the field to start spring practice. And said, if you'll leave, you know, his name and address here, I'll have Mr. Bryant sign a picture and mail to him. And even as a little kid, I thought, Paul Bear Bryant is not going to get around to autographing and sending the little kid in Mississippi a picture. And then she said, would you like to tour the office? And we go in there. And to this day, that's one of the most surreal moments, is being in Bear Bryant's office and just being able to look around. It was a very neat experience. So fast forward about 2 weeks, and I'm checking the mail in Mississippi. Little kid, get a 8.5 by 11 envelope from University of Tuscaloosa. Open it up. There's an autographed picture. It says, to Clay, best regards, Paul Bear Bryant. And I just thought, and to this day still think, but even as a kid, I thought that is so very neat that someone of his stature took the time to sit down and, you know, autograph and send, et cetera, you know, a picture to a young fan.
You know, Clay, so, that is such an extraordinary story, but you're right, because I was, I used to roam around that athletic department, and there wasn't any. I mean, yeah. I mean, you know, if they saw a stranger, they might be alert. But you could walk right in, and that is an amazing story. I can't thank you enough for sharing that. That is truly remarkable. Just to think about how different things were, and how collegial he was and cordial.
Yes, I appreciate you listening, Paul, and I agree 100%. Nothing like that could happen today. I'm just blessed that I was in the right place at the right time.
Well, I'm really glad you shared it. I'll never forget. So he died on this Wednesday, 39 years ago. And on Thursday, I went over to his office. And Linda Knowles was his assistant. And it was, you know, fairly dark in there, and the door was shut. And I wasn't really sure as a reporter what I was looking for, but I just knew that I had to go by there. And we just casually talked. She talked about, you know, what he had done after retiring. He would come in, you know, maybe have lunch in his office, you know, make some phone calls. He said he really had gotten in. This was still January in Alabama. He would maybe go out to the club and hit some golf balls. But I'll never forget as she was talking about how sad, you know, the day and the tragedy of it all. Because, I mean, there was nothing really going on in that office at the time. He had a box. Remember, we all used to have these little boxes, and it said Coach Bryant. And, you know, being a nosy reporter, I just peered in there. And there was one message slip. You know, somebody had called him back. And it was so eerie to see a message. This is now the day after he died, to see a message in there that we all knew would never get returned. Let's check in with Ed in Tuscaloosa. Hello, Ed. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Paul, this is a real plus for me to get to hear Russ Woods, who was a typical Alabama Coach Bryant player. But on a personal note with Coach Bryant, the night before he died, I had a phone call from Birmingham from a lady with a newspaper. And she said that she had a report that Coach Bryant had been taken to the hospital. And could I confirm or deny? And I said, I could. Well, why did you call me? And she said, well, your name had just happened to come up. And I said, well, who you need to call is Sam Bailey.
Right.
You remember Sam?
I sure do. What an amazing man.
I said, will you call Sam Bailey? And he can. So the minute I hung up, I called Sam. And I said, Sam, they're going to call you. I said, what's going on? She said, well, he was at Jimmy Hinton's and said he got a chest hurt. He said, I never will forget, he said he's out at the hospital now. And he said, damn mad because they won't let him have any cigarette. And the next morning, I really had to see Coach Sam about something about spring practice. I went to the hospital, And before I left, my wife had told me that Coach Bryant, it kind of turned for the better. But coming back, she had called me and she said, he's not going to believe it, but Coach Bryant just died. And I nearly did at the same time, but that was a very emotional moment, obviously, and I just wanted to share that.
It was so different back then. I'll never forget on the night the night before it was announced that he was retiring. I was up at the newspaper, and you're calling people left and right. And I called his house. To have his number was not. To have Nick Saban's number right now, I have a better chance of getting through to Vladimir Putin than I would Nick Saban. I remember Mary Harmon, his wife, answered the phone. I didn't know her. I said, "That's so and so from the Birmingham." She said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, we're just." I actually said this with a straight face, Eddie. I said, "We're just trying to run down the story that Coach Bryant is about to announce his retirement." And she said, "Well, that's not true. He's out recruiting in Mississippi." I said, "Well, well, you sure about that?" I didn't know why I said that. She said, "Well, just don't believe everything you hear right now." I said, "Okay, I appreciate that." And I can only imagine this is, a young guy in his mid-20s when Coach Bryant walked in, and he said, what that SOB want,
And he probably did say that.
Yeah, no, that's the one thing I never found out, because I is what he really thought of me. But I know.
Well, Paul, it's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Eddie, thank you so much. Appreciate you sharing that story. And for those of us who were alive back then, and it is a day. And there are a lot of days like that in history. But we will continue with this day, though. And Heather Dinich will join us next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
And welcome back here. We are really looking forward to talking to Heather Dinich. We talked to her right before the CFP, and of course she covered the meetings that transpired and all the things that are going on in connection with the never-ending CFP expansion conversation. Heather joining us. Heather, first of all, thanks for the time. I don't know if you were able to hear George Kliakoff a minute ago, but he was here on Friday. I'm really curious what your reaction to what he said is. I'm sure you've heard it before.
Told me that, and Paul, my reaction to it is what he said is my best guess as to what is going to happen, which is they won't be able to agree to shoehorn it in before the end of this contract expires in 2025, and they will look forward to what they're calling year 13, which is the beginning of a new contract. They have to. you can't just roll out of bed one day and say, oh, we need a new college football playoff format. You've got to figure this out some years in advance before the contract expires, because as of right this skinny minute, there isn't anything. Year 13 is literally a blank slate. So they've got to figure out what it's going to look like past that. And when ACC Commissioner Jim Phillips came out and said publicly a few weeks ago, very strongly, the ACC is united in its front that now is not the right time to expand the college football playoff. They either really need to believe in the power of persuasion, or they just need to move it along and do what George said and focus on the next contract.
Heather, you've watched it all in real time, these 3 days of long meetings, and obviously nothing was resolved. It wasn't expected, but how would you describe the mood of these commissioners right now?
They're certainly frustrated. They're tired of it. They probably are reflective of what fans and coaches and everyone who's been following this process feels like. Let's figure it out already. There are people in that room, and you've heard SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey say before, hey, we came here ready to vote. We're ready to vote one way or another. And that hasn't happened to this point because the microscope is on the ACC, because Jim Phillips said now's not the right time, and the Big Ten, where Commissioner Kevin Warren has said that he stands by his belief that the Power Five conference champions should be guaranteed a spot in an extended playoff. So you've got this dynamic where they're not agreeing right now and they're talking in circles, which is why Notre Dame Athletic Director Jack Swarbrick told me the most important conversations are the ones that are going to happen now between their next meetings, the one-on-one conversations. Can they figure this out before they get to Dallas in a couple of weeks?
And so another meeting, of course. What is expected to go on there, Heather?
Well, I'll be doing the same thing I have been, Paul, sitting outside the door waiting for smoke signals as to whether or not something's going to happen. I mean, there is some serious doubt in that room, to echo the frustration. And I want to go back to something that George Kliavkov said, and it is, when you look at year 13, it doesn't have to be unanimous. And I asked CFP Executive Director Bill Hancock, what does it have to be in order to agree, come to some sort of a consensus on a format? And he said it has to be a majority, including a majority of the Power Five commissioners. And I thought that was very interesting, because if you get the SEC, the Big 12, and the Pac-12 to agree, George is right. Everyone else then has to decide, do they want to come along? And Bill Hancock has told me that's the way it's been since the Bowl Coalition. You know, he said almost 30 years. You decide on a format, and then everybody else, it's up to you. Do you want to participate in it?
So, if you, I know guessing is not the way you do things, but if you had to look at a template of what happens next and then what continues to happen, where is this? And it's obvious very little is going to get done right now, but when's the earliest something could be settled?
Well, there have been a handful, a minority of commissioners who have told me, look, it's still possible that this can happen as early as 2024 or for the 2025 season. There are more people I've spoken to who are very doubtful and less optimistic. And so to me, just based on these conversations that I've had to this point, and again, that's knowing that anything can change between now and their next meeting, my best guess, Paul, is that college football fans see a 12-team playoff starting in, quote, year 13, which would be like 2026, and whether or not there are automatic qualifiers, I would be surprised, quite honestly, because the format that was proposed was the six highest ranked conference champions and then the next six ranked champions. It's interesting to me because they just announced new selection committee members, and my first thought was, I wonder if they'll be picking 12 teams for the playoff or four teams.
One other thing that came out today, I think it was Gary Barta, said that the Big Ten is thinking about changing the way it does business to go one less game, no divisions. Where does that fit into all of this, or does it?
Well, I think it's a – I do think it fits, and I think it's something that they all will have to talk about in 2 years for sure, because how does that line up with what the SEC is going to look like with Texas and Oklahoma and becoming the first 16-team super conference? I think that opens the conversation for all of the conferences to reevaluate and look at how they do things. And certainly the Big Ten is a part of that. And plus you've got the alliance and the scheduling, and how does that all factor into it? Everyone is still waiting to hear what the alliance's scheduling partnership amounts to. So I think that, yes, it does, but also you've got to figure this out first. I mean, they still haven't determined whether or not it's an 8 or a 12. I mean, 99% of the people in the room are in favor of 12 when it does expand, but they've got to figure the big details out before I think they can figure out those nitty-gritties.
One thing that I want to go back to before we wrap up, Kliakoff indicated that it shouldn't have gone down the way it did when Bill Hancock and others brought the public news out. I mean, you were on the front line of that, talking about this every day. You know what the reaction was. You know what the timetable is. Have you heard any reaction from people like Bill or others to what Kliakoff is now suggesting?
Yes, Bill Hancock and Greg Sankey, multiple people that I've talked to, have said the reason that they did that was because you have to go back to campus and talk to your coaches and your athletic directors and everyone else to get feedback on this proposal. And their concern was that they were going to go through that process and it was going to leak out. And it was going to leak out the wrong way. And so their side of the story is we wanted to prevent misinformation. We wanted to tell it the way we wanted to tell it, get it out there so everybody had it at once. And that's it. And everyone I've spoken to who has that point of view has said we have no regrets about the way we did it. We would have done it the exact same way.
Well done. Heather, thank you. Appreciate it as always.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Back, some great interviews. Nate Oates earlier was just fantastic. Really just doing a self-analysis live on the air of what happened last night for the Alabama Crimson Tide in a loss to Georgia. We have another guest coming up in a few minutes. Appreciate Heather joining us. And let's go to Mark, who is up next in Connecticut. Mark, good afternoon to you.
Hey, good afternoon, Paul. Hey, listening to you reminisce about your days at the Post-Herald, trying to match that story when it was breaking that Coach Bryant was retiring. I was actually in an adjacent office, I think, probably that night. I was with United Press International.
Of course.
And we actually knew each other back in the day when I was working for Joey Ledford. But here, a quick story, and I've got maybe a little bit on the death and the funeral as well.
Sure.
But that night, so the story broke from the Giants, as you probably remember.
Right.
That Ray Perkins was coming. And so all of us in Alabama were scrambling to match the story. And I was doing what you were doing, calling around. I finally got the editor of the Tuscaloosa News, Al Browning. Remember
right.
him?
Oh, sure.
And I said, hey, look, Al, you don't have to be my source. I just need to know, is it true? He said something like, Look, I don't know anything. I found out years later, I was told Coach Bryant was sitting in Al Browning's living room when I was talking to Al Browning. So, I don't know.
You know, Mark, you worked for my closest friend at the time, who called me. We lived in the same apartment complex because, you know, when he moved to town, he stayed with me, and I was leaving. I was going out of town for a couple of weeks, and I gave him my apartment. And he called me and said, "Do you know what do you know about?" I said, "I don't know. I mean, I was literally home on a Tuesday night in December, 2 weeks after the season. You really were shutting down." So I came down there, and he was there, I'm sure. I don't remember where Joey was. But there was a story, and I don't know if it was UPI or somebody else. Maybe it was the Washington Post who was reporting that Ray Perkins was going to be the offensive coordinator for a year. Remember that?
But I do recall that the Washington Post is where we finally got enough attribution to put our own story out.
But I'll tell you this, Mark, I'll never forget this as long as I live. So I'm a young reporter like you were and Joey. And I finally talked to Mrs. Bryant and a couple other people. And I think I even called Ray Perkins. We, you know, back then, you had everyone's number. Or if you didn't, you had a friend like you who had it. So I called Perkins, and his wife confirmed. I think his wife confirmed it to me. He said, "Listen, I just whatever, you know." And I knew it was. And then I called. I got a call from the New York Times. A guy named Joseph Vecchione. He was their executive sports editor. He said, "What do you, typical New York? What do you hear about this Ray Perkins?" I said, "Well, we pretty much got it confirmed." He said, "That's a bunch of crap." I said, and he used a bunch of crap. I said, no, it's not. I'm thinking, this guy may be, I may be sending my resume to this guy. Let me calm down. I don't want to just tell him he's a moron. I said, we are running with the story that Ray Perkins is. He said, "That's the biggest blanking, whatever." I said, "Listen, whatever." I said, you don't have to believe it. So we wrote it, you wrote it, and I think then the AP had another story. I mean, everybody, and what was interesting, nobody knew what was going on. This wasn't like in the world of Twitter where we wrote the story. I'll never forget being at the press conference the next day, Mark. And I had all these people coming up to me and go, "Man, congratulations, you broke the biggest story of all time." I'm like going, "We didn't break anything." But that was when people got their paper in the morning, that was the first time they had heard of it. It wasn't like today where you hear about it 10 seconds later. So how did you cover the funeral, the death of Coach Bryant?
This was back in that, you'll recall the USFL, right, was active at the time.
Right,
and
sure.
I was off that day, and I was supposed to go out to Legion Field and interview Raleigh Dotch, the coach of the Birmingham Stallions.
Right.
And I swung by the bureau around midday, early afternoon, just to pick up a notepad, if you can believe it. You know? And the guys in the bureau, it was probably Joey and you may remember Harold Jackson.
Oh, sure. Harold was a great reporter.
Said,
went on to Philadelphia, didn't he?
He was part of a team that won a Pulitzer
at the
Philadelphia Inquirer. Yeah. So they said, "Hey, your interview with Coach Dotch is going to have to wait. We just got word that Coach Bryant has passed away in Tuscaloosa. Get in your car and get down there." And, you know, from Birmingham. And so I went down with a photographer, and the photographer went to the hospital, and I went out on campus to walk into bars and catch students and get reaction. It's probably hard for, maybe it's not that hard, but for people in the rest of the country to understand what a cataclysmic event his death was in the state of Alabama. I don't know if there could have been a bigger story, but I mean, for days, there were days we almost never left the bureau. It was around the clock, every news cycle coverage of that and reactions and old teammates or players and coaches and everything you can imagine. And I was an Alabama fan, you know, honestly. And it was probably 4 or 5 days after he had died before we actually had a chance to kind of sit down and say, God almighty, you know, I mean, because the intensity of the work was such, you just didn't have time to even really think about what had happened. But it was, you know, it was just one of those things that you just, you know, you never forget where you were, or what you were doing.
No, Mark, I would agree with you. I remember being at a party on that Saturday night. It was a typical newspaper party where you really don't remember what happens. And and talking to my editor, and you know, he was like, I mean, I had lived through Elvis's death, interestingly, with Joey. I don't know if he ever told you. So he was an intern at the Memphis paper. So we both rode out to Graceland the night Elvis died, but that was a different time. That was a different situation. But within, you know, that was a worldwide event. And Coach Bryan, it was a national story, but it was really in that community of Birmingham, Tuscaloosa, where it people were numb for 2 or 3 days. You're absolutely right. And then the funeral was just it's never been there will never be anything quite like that day.
No, I don't know if I can't even remember the projections or the numbers, but I think they were talking about like a million people lining.
That, the estimate was 750,000 to a million people had lined. Was it I-65? I think it's or I-20. I can't 50, remember.
59.
59. Shows you. I only lived in Alabama 30 years. Couldn't remember which the main interstate was. there were that many people. And the sights that you would, when you're driving on, people have seen this on documentaries, but I mean, there would be, little kids and grandparents and dogs and farm animals. I mean, everybody, literally gathered on the overpass, to watch this unfold.
Yep. Well. Look, listening to you talk about it, I was kind of thinking we were.
Well, I'm
probably
really glad. Are you still in the industry, or what are you doing these days, Mark?
You know what? I left UPI. I did corporate public relations for about 30 years, and then I was a graduate of Alabama, and I got an offer to come back and be an adjunct professor in the public relations department. Yeah, for a few years. And did that for a while, and now I'm officially retired and helping out raise my grandchildren and look after my family.
Well, it's so great to reconnect. Those were quite memorable days. And I was friends with not only Joey but Harold. There was another guy named Kurt Frank. Do you remember Kurt, or was he there after?
Kurt. Well, I tell you what, when Kurt went to Miami, that was the opening that allowed me to join the staff in Birmingham. Yeah, I was fresh off the campus.
Kurt is now the editor of some paper in Ohio, Dayton or something.
Yeah,
those,
I think it's an Akron. Akron okay. Comes to mind.
But Kurt and Joey were my two closest friends. We were inseparable, and I mean, it was but that story was there was never one that rivaled that. Well, Mark, I can't thank you enough for bringing back some incredible memories of a major tragedy, but of also something that people will never forget.
Yeah. Well, look, thanks for giving me time to talk about it, Paul. And hey, congratulations on the way your career has gone. You are the man, and really enjoy your program every afternoon.
Mark, you be well, and so nice of you to call. That is really nice. I'm using the airwaves of this television and radio network to keep up with all my old Facebook friends. We are going to take a break.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
And we are back here late on Wednesday afternoon. Legend is next.
Woo! NWO, Black Hat in the house. What's going on, Paul Feinbaum? How you doing, brother?
Good to hear from you, Black Cat. Black Hat, I'm sorry.
You know it, brother. Black Cat, Black Hat, just get it right. Like to say RIP to the GOAT, Paul Bear Bryant, greatest of all time in my book, a true Black Hat man. That's right, an originator, unafraid, dominant, a great personality, a true Black Hat, baby, a true Black Hatter. RIP, Coach, we still love you, and we'll always love you. Paul, I'd like to pass out a Black Hat. To Jeff from Ohio, your Black Hat has come in, brother. Welcome. And also like to pass out a Black Hat to Miss Kitty. That's right, Miss Kitty. Miss Faye, that's right, the Miss Kitty of the Black Hat crew. The queen of the Black Hat crew,
Miss
baby.
Miss Kitty.
Yes, welcome in, Miss Kitty, Miss Faye, the queen, baby. Hey, Paul, you could put all the Yellow Hatters in a ring. I-Man, Daryl, Groundhog, and put a steel cage over it, and have that idiot lawyer from Louisiana on the outside as a manager, and Matt on his tricycle running around the ring, and put me in the other corner, and in 5 minutes they would all be at the top of the cage saying, Paul, let me out, Paul! Paul, let me out! Let me out! I'm Harley Charlie, baby. I'm East Coast. I'll bite an ear off. I'll take a chunk out of a nose. You better know, Yellow Hatters, who you're dealing with, baby. You don't never, never, ever challenge the NWO or the Black Hat. Paul, let me say this about Nate Oates. I love friggin' Nate Oates. I snuck out of the Legend Cave a couple weeks ago after talking to my life-size Nick Saban pitcher and saying, heard Nick say to me, get out a little bit, Legend. And I snuck down with a sweatshirt with Squirrel on the written on the back of it, and nobody knew who I was as I entered Coleman Coliseum, or even asked who I was. And I sat there and watched Auburn beat Alabama. And I knew that night, Alabama ain't nowhere close to the best team in the SEC. That's the best friggin' Auburn basketball team I've ever seen, brother. I mean, Jabari Smith is a poor man, Kevin Durant, and KB Johnson. How the hell you let him go, Georgia, and Wheeler? What was you thinking? I mean, and the green kid off the bench is like watching old Vinnie Johnson of the Detroit Pistons, the microwave oven. I mean, that team, Bruce Pearl has a team. Alabama just don't have no dogs in the middle, Paul. I mean, March is all about the guards, and they might accomplish something with that. But, man, they got no identity. They got no dogs in the middle. And you seen that last night. How the hell you let a weak-ass Georgia team beat you after Georgia beat us in a football game? How are you even not motivated? Come on, Nato's. Put a foot in that butt. You got four of the best guards in the country. Wake the hell up. Wake up. And before I get off, Paul, let me ask you. Did I hear him say that Stenson Bennett skipped the draft? Is that what I heard?
Yes.
Who the hell was going to draft him, Paul? That's why he skipped the draft. They're not looking for 5'8 quarterbacks in the NFL, brother. They're not looking for them. Who the hell was going to draft him? He's going to skip it next year, too. He's the next Buck Ballou, Georgia. Your 40-year, every 40-year walk-on quarterback. That's what he is. That's why he skipped the draft. What was he going to get drafted as, a place kick holder? As a clipboard holder? I mean, hell, the NFL's had enough of Greg McElroy's in its lifetime. You're not getting drafted, brother. Forget about it. Go on and get that manager job at Burger King and go on and be a legend on that 40-year championship. NWO, Black Hat out. Welcome, Miss Kitty, to the Black Hat crew.
Whoa.
Legend out.
Shane is up next. Hey, Shane.
Hey, Paul. How you doing today?
We are doing great. Thank you.
Hey, I had a question for you too. What do you think of Sam Pittman and his portal? I mean, we're getting a lot of good players out of Georgia and Alabama both, and LSU. What do you think about that?
I think Pittman has his program on fire right now, and he is getting a lot of players. And I think that all the attention, all the praise, all the publicity is paying off for him.
Yeah, I totally agree, Paul. I was wanting to see if you could look up something for me.
Sure.
TV schedule for SEC baseball is not out yet. Do you know why? Is there a certain?
It's still being worked on based on what I'm hearing, but it will be out soon, and you will like it. We're up against a break. More to come.